Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa, joined as always by the legend Les Thatcher. Lot of questions going into this past Sunday's Forbidden Door pay-per-view for AEW. One real interesting build in that the cold announcement was met with great joy and much rejoicing, and the build was kind of meh. Show, however, delivered for so many people. The ending, well, we'll get into all of those things and how it went into Blood and Guts on Wednesday, which gave them the best number they've had in a while. That is forthcoming on this edition of Wrestling Weekly. First, though, we check in with Les, and we're going to try to do this in 60 minutes or less before something else goes wrong with my board here.
Well, you know what? We warriors can work under battle conditions. That's you know,
right.
We battle scarred participants in this stuff. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I've been having some issues, not just with the Bluetooth, but with this board itself, which, by the way, still comes highly recommended by me. I give two thumbs up to the Rodecaster Pro for anyone who's actually interested in the podcasting equipment and what have you. But it's kind of funny because, you know, I'm sure my lady is not the only one who talks about this, but she's the one I talk to the most, so I'll reference her here. In that, you know, once you have a, like, say, a phone or a computer or something like that of a particular line or edition, you know, after the next one, the next generation one comes out, yours all of a sudden, I don't know how this happens or why, I'm not suggesting anything untoward, yes I am, that yours all of a sudden doesn't work as well anymore. Things just start going left and you wonder how that happens. Like she had she's had it happen almost with every phone. And I think Apple actually even had to pay someone out. Correct me if I'm wrong on that, somebody listening to this, years ago, throttling people's internet connections and different things because they wanted them to buy the most recent version of the iPhone or something along those lines. May or may not have been Apple. So, you know, we'll use allegedly in there. But I would note that we had all sorts of problems with my board today and the Bluetooth connection, which has never happened before. This Rodecaster Pro version 1 has worked like a charm from the moment I had it, purchased it, and I give it two thumbs up. But it's interesting that I had problems this week, and you'll never guess what came out just a week or two ago, Les.
I'm afraid to ask, but you're going to tell me, aren't you? Go ahead.
The new and improved Rodecaster Pro 2. So
wow.
No sooner does this new board come out than I turn this thing on today and it doesn't want to work. How does that happen?
Conspiracy is what I think.
That's exactly where I'm going with this.
Hell. Well, it'd make a good storyline. Probably better than most we've heard this week.
Well, we're definitely going to talk about AEW, the follow-up from the pay-per-view, Blood and Guts and all that. But there are some things here in WWE land we want to make sure we cover first. Before we get into the stuff with Vince McMahon, which has gone in depth in this edition of the Wrestling Observer newsletter, which is up on the front page now at F4WOnline.com. A few thoughts about WWE signing Logan Paul to a multi-year contract, not a full-timer, at least not according to what's been reported so far. He's coming in for select events, pay-per-views, big shows, things of that nature, which is the best thing possible, I would think, for him and for the company. Because when I saw this make the news wires in the last day or two, Les, the first thing I thought was, a guy is outspoken, and someone who knows how to get himself over as good as this, if he actually works in this system on a consistent basis for any length of time, he will hate this forever because they're just going to make him do all sorts of stuff that he knows isn't going to be right for him. And it'll be, you know, 6 months before he's suing, trying to get out, wanting to take a boxing match, and they won't let him. So this sort of pick and choose for big events thing, I think, works for both he and the company really well.
Yeah, I think so, too. And I first of all, I think, the one time I saw it, you know, the guy is obviously trained and trying, you know, and he's not the worst in-ring guy I've seen in the last year. Believe me, I've been to a couple indie shows who make him look like Buddy Rogers in his prime. But I think the big thing is because he has such of a wide audience for WWE to pick from too, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, people who aren't WWE fans as such. And so I think that's, you know, looking at it from the business standpoint, it has to be as important as, yes, he looks like, you know, he's in decent shape. And he is willing to come in and, you know, and learn the business and make him, you know. So, yeah, and well, with McAfee, they're signing people to wrestle that aren't wrestlers. It's come to this, right?
But really interesting that both of them are really good at the kind of things we've complained that WWE is not good at anymore.
Yes, yes. And they actually both want to know how to work, which is also mysterious in many ways, because there are guys who are making a lot of money in this business that I watch and say, they don't want to know how to work. Whatever. Yeah. But yeah, he will, he's high profile. And I think that comes, you know, and he's a good looking kid. He'll have detractors obviously, but, fans as well. So yeah, it's on their part. It's not that they're getting a great athlete or a great wrestler, but they're getting media attraction. And I think that's the important part of the contract for them. I don't know for sure.
Yeah, don't be surprised if you see him at Money in the Bank this weekend. I left that out. We're going to have to take a look at that lineup for Money in the Bank and at least predict a couple of matches on that thing. But Paul made that contract signing. You may have seen the picture of him with Triple H and Stephanie. What I also saw actually about an hour before you and I got together here today, Les, was an appearance from Miz on the Today Show. And amongst all the different things he was promoting, including Money in the Bank this weekend, the picture they showed of Logan Paul was him holding up a piece of paper where he wrote, "I'm coming for you, Miz." And Miz promised he'd have a big announcement about that this Monday on Raw. So don't be surprised if that match is going to be set for SummerSlam over the course of the next few days.
Talking about changes, Miz, who is okay in ring once the bell rings. He's not a top worker, there's no doubt, but he's come a long way from when he first stepped foot into WWE, that's for sure. But he's not the guy that I'm figuring to be the top player. But it appears that he's getting, you know, a lot of high-profile stuff going on. There's got to be a reason behind that, too, I would guess. And I'm not, I hope it's not anything to do with the championship belt, believe me.
Definitely not. But he gets a lot of these assignments because he is very media friendly. I give him this. He is extremely polished. He is a tremendous representative for the company. I know a lot of people gave him grief about that a few years ago. You know, he'll do this, he'll do that. He'll go out there and he'll tout the company line. But you know what? He does it and he does it well. And anytime they put him in a spot, he does not make them or himself look bad in any shape, form, or fashion. So he is really a good person to have out there to talk about your company, because he knows exactly how to do it. And he's not going to put there's not going to be a viral moment where he drops the stock price. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, I'll tell you something else that I've said to a couple people that he has come up in the conversation. I said, you know, I don't watch Miz and Mrs. Consistently. I haven't seen probably a half dozen episodes over the last few years, but I'll occasionally catch it. And the one thing I will say this, for reality shows, they come across as more natural to me. You know, like this is, we know that some of the shtick is skitted, you know, the skits and stuff are written and they're not really just, you know, organic. But it does, they don't play it that way. And they both come across as pretty natural in this environment. So, you know, it's not, they are reporting what the words are, you know, that sort of thing. So.
You know, it's funny you say that. That actually came up on the interview. Obviously, he was also promoting his show. Why wouldn't you? And one of the things he said was that he and Maryse talked about this before taking the opportunity to do the show, and that they had agreed we want it more to be like, hey, the camera's just here while we're living our everyday lives, as opposed to the fabricated kind of stuff you often see on reality TV that you just referred to, which doesn't mean they don't have some of that. But they both said, he said that they made it a point to go back to USA when it was pitched to them and say, we want it to be more of like, you know, that you see who we really are and what we do on a day-to-day basis. Because in this life, what we do on a day-to-day basis is interesting enough.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, they were buying and remodeling homes and stuff like that. And in the California market, if that was successful at all, hell, they're probably ready to retire in a year or so anyway. I mean, and watching that, you know, if you watch any of that stuff go down. But yeah, he's a pro. He's not a great worker, but he's a pro. And so that's going to get him a lot more mileage and a lot more appearances in you know, more not necessarily just wrestling spots or things, to, you know. And honestly, for the industry, that's a good thing, because, you know, back in the 70s, when I was handling public relations in Atlanta, or dealing with, you know, helping with them in Charlotte or here in Knoxville, that was one of my things, is I want to put my wrestlers where they're not normally seen, so they stick out, you know, like the duck out of water sort of thing. And Miz is good at that, as you mentioned. So more power to him, baby.
Definitely. And we're going to take a look at some of those matches for Money in the Bank before this show is over. But before we jump to AEW, I guess we really have to mention, because it's become a story this week, with the resurgence of this incident from 1986 between Vince McMahon and Rita Chatterton, who was once briefly employed as a WWF referee. The article was written in New York Magazine, and part of the reason it's become a thing is because the person who wrote it is the author of an upcoming unauthorized biography on Vince McMahon, which has understandably also been pushed back a little bit because there's another chapter or two to write, thanks to the events of the last few weeks with Vince. But the article he wrote centered around the incident with Miss Chatterton. And you've probably seen plenty about that over the course of this week. And there's a whole lot more about it in The Observer if you want to get caught up on the sexual assault accusations. Obviously, it's timely because it plays into everything that's been happening with Vince over the last few weeks and the board investigating alleged inappropriate relationships and whether or not he used corporate funds in any shape, form, or fashion. So this came up again. And so, as someone who was not necessarily in the company in 1986, but was certainly in the business in 1986, I wondered if you had some thoughts about this, whether or not there was any chatter about it at the time.
Oh, yeah. There was a lot of talk about it. Something like this happens, it's never quiet, that's for sure. You know, as I mentioned to you before we started recording, a personal friend of mine lives in Dayton, Ohio, is a freelance writer, and he sent me an email a couple weeks ago and asked me, do you know this Rita that was a referee briefly with WWF in the 86? And I said, no, I wasn't with the company then, but no, I'd never met her. And so he sent me back another mail. He said, if you didn't know, I'm trying to get something together to do a piece on Vince and stuff like that. And I said, oh, she was involved, and I had forgotten. And then he reminded me that she was the referee that apparently had said that Vince had raped her in the back of the limo. And I said, boy, I remember now. Yeah, I do. Yeah, she was on Geraldo, and that was in 92. So that was 6 years afterwards. And there was nothing to be done because of statutes and limitations, et cetera, et cetera. But yes, so my friend didn't get the right story because this guy that's doing the unauthorized biography got to it, and then the New Yorker magazine jumped on it. And God, that I think that's just the tip of the iceberg, Vic, to be honest with you, because let's face it, in this day and age and in this society that we live in, the more dirt there is, the more ink there's going to be written about it, right? I mean, if they were saying that Vince had once thought about joining the clergy and went to church every Wednesday night and every Sunday, that would never find the light of day in any magazine. But this will, and Lord knows how that's going to affect stock prices. And you know what I said to my a friend of mine, too, when this particular article had come up, and I said, well, you know, here's the deal. You're talking about a company that's publicly held. And if the dirt gets too thick, you know, the stockholders, the whatever, may, you know, this whole thing, I mean, it's not, they can't take his stock away, but they could sure make sure he's not in that seat. And I mean, do I believe that as long as Vince is taking a breath, whoever is in that seat, their mouth opens, his words come out. Yes, I believe that. But as far as being the public face of that company, this could foreshadow the fact that at some point the stockholders will come up and say, hey, he needs to step aside permanently, don't you think?
Well, I think what's interesting about this, obviously it's timely because of everything that's been going on with the board. But even though Ms. Chatterton did not speak to the writer of this unauthorized biography or the article he wrote for The New Yorker, put this together on obviously a lot of his own research and other people that he's talked to, whether or not this article now catches enough people's eyes, not necessarily to move the stock price or upset the board, but, and this is spitballing, I want to make this clear, if by any chance there would be anyone else out there who's had a similar experience, you know, someone who sees this being taken seriously might be emboldened to speak up as well. And if there are more people out there from the 80s or 90s who have a story to tell, that could be really serious for both the board, the stock price, and all the other things that are business related that we've been talking about over the last couple of weeks.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. It could. Well, you know, something else that was brought back to my attention too by my friend who's the freelance writer is the young lady in that was the attendant at the
The tanning salon in Boca Raton, Florida. This was back in January yes. of 2006, where the employee alleged that Vince tried to kiss and grope her and show pictures on his phone that were rather lewd. Think Brett Favre's short time with the Jets and those stories. And that actually never went anywhere either. But again, in this atmosphere, maybe people start to give those kinds of things a second look. And maybe people, you know, visit this young lady and try to get her to speak about her experience as well.
Sure. Well, yes, I'm sure somebody will get to her. I mean, at some point, if they can find her, and damn sure try to get her to make a statement of some sort. I know my friend, the writer, said, well, you know, and again, he's more about the details, and they're sketchy in my mind right now, he said, had that have happened in Ohio, Vince would have probably, at least put a little jail time in, or at least been arrested. And then bonded out or whatever. But he said Florida has their own set of rules, and I never, we were just going back and forth email, so I didn't ask for a detailed, reason why he thought that. But apparently, he's researched it to some degree.
You know,
but
what?
Yeah, they're going to be.
I'm going to look that up because while you were saying that, I was just thinking to myself, wasn't the whole thing with the Patriots owner? Didn't that happen at a massage place in Florida? Was it Florida?
Kraft. Was it Florida?
I'm
not sure. I think it was. I think you're right.
It was indeed in the state of Florida, yes.
Well, you know, real quick, we're talking about years. We won't be sitting down to talk on Monday, but Monday becomes the 62nd anniversary of my first wrestling match.
Wow, that's right.
62 years, yes. And talk about things changing in 62 years. Whoa. Believe me. And not all for the better. And please, we won't go in. We won't take 3 or 4 hours here today to tell you about things that aren't better. So, or at least I won't. But yeah, I was just thinking about that. Yeah, July the 4th, 1960, Blue Hills, Maine.
That's right. And your debut, you wrestled twice at an outdoor
yes.
show in the middle of the sun-soaked Blue Hills, Maine on July 4th. Hitting that canvas must have
yes.
been a lot of fun.
It certainly, you know what? I don't, if you held a gun to my head right now, so it was a canvas hot, I'd say, hell, I don't know. I was busy worrying about not walking out of a headlock that Bull Montana put on me. That is the one thing I remember about that match, that he was so loose, such a great worker. And I was, well, with him, I was more nervous than I was with Ronnie, because I'd been around Ronnie and worked out with Ronnie some. But with Bull, I bought tickets, and he was a mean-ass heel, as when I was a kid. So anyway, he put the headlock on me, and I was so nervous, and I started, and he cinched up just, he said, stay in it, kid. I said, okay, not a problem. Not a problem. Yeah, I worked twice, and once in a single, and then back in a tag, and we showered under a hose behind the spring water. I had to be because I froze my ass off. I remember that too. welcome to big time wrestling, right?
Oh, no, the best welcome to big time wrestling is how much, if anything, did you get paid for that?
I got $12.
Well, you were a big shot.
Hey, $12 in 1960 was a fair amount of money. You know, gas prices, I could have bought a gas station for $12.
Oh, yeah, 1960, yes.
Christ. Well, I filled up this morning at Sam's here in Knoxville, 13-plus gallons at $65. So, yeah, it's a long way from 1960. But, I feel blessed, Vic, to have been able to live my dream. And, I'm not as active in the industry as I would like to be now or as much as I used to be. But unlike my friend Ric Flair, I don't want to die in a ring. But I've always said I thought I'd, probably be doing something wrestling related when the good Lord called me home. And I don't know if that'll be a fact or not, so. But anyway, yep, it's been 62 years, and as the Christofferson song says, the going up was worth the coming down.
Yes, indeed. Well, happy anniversary, brother, since I know we won't get a chance
Thank to you, sir.
On the air Monday.
Right.
Well, you talked about that in-ring debut, so let's get to some stuff that's happening or did happen over the course of the week in the ring here in AEW before we wrap with a few thoughts on Money in the Bank this weekend. So we had a really interesting pay-per-view, the experiment here, if you will, with New Japan. Tony Khan said before the show, if it went well enough, then he would love to make this a regular thing. Early reports on buy rates indicate somewhere in the area of 125,000, which is a little less than they've been doing lately. But for a one-time thing that did not have a ton of build, and the build was meh, and all sorts of injuries and card reshuffling and what have you, I think that's more than enough given their current buy rate numbers to warrant a return if New Japan is up for it. We saw, unfortunately, what appears to be a pretty serious concussion suffered by Adam Cole on Sunday night. That combined with the shoulder issues we had been hearing him having, I sincerely hope he just goes ahead and takes the time to heal 100% and go get that shoulder fixed. That's just my own personal thought on that.
And yes, sir.
Yeah,
yes, sir.
For sure, because he's a valuable asset. And the opportunity to get home, first of all, and get healthy, first and foremost, is what's most important. But based on the way he had been used and maybe abused during his time here, maybe some time away would do him some good.
Yeah. Yeah. It won't hurt him. It won't hurt him. You know, in thinking about that, and this is something you and I have talked about before. My friend Jim has brought this up time and time again when it relates to AEW, is here's superstar Bill Jones, and he comes out to wrestle. And people are somewhere are saying, who the hell is Bill Jones? I don't know. Do you know? I've never seen Bill. Who's Bill Jones? Well, I've heard the name, but I don't know. For this New Japan thing, had there have been video clips, montage, whatever, video packages, let's say, of Okada, Tanahashi, et cetera, where, showing them and giving the background of what they have done in New Japan, how many titles or how long they've been wrestling or, wrestler of the year and blah, 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 blah. Because I don't, there's where I think Tony Khan, well, a lot of people in this industry come up short. I promote professional wrestling, and this guy is a great professional wrestler, so I'm telling you, and you've got to know who he is because you've never seen him before. You don't watch that show. The casual fan probably knows there is a New Japan and probably has heard a name or two of those guys. But there is where good video packages of the New Japan guys would have come in. With good voiceovers and stuff like the Tanahashi Moxley thing, tie it together. Moxley's wanted to wrestle this guy, and maybe Tanahashi is, video packages, people, leading up to your big pay-per-view. And I honestly believe that the buy rate would have been better. Make sense?
I'd like to think so. I mean, it's something that I was hoping they would do. I don't want to belabor them about the ratings that they've been going through recently, especially after a terrific pay-per-view and a real good number, obviously, with Blood and Guts this week. I think they deserve their flowers for what they've accomplished over the course of the last 7 days. But since you brought that up, I'm just going to mention this without spending a whole lot of time on it because we want to talk about Blood and Guts. If you look at those numbers over the last 10 weeks and really what's been happening over the last few months, I want those video packages, right? I think they're really important. I agree with you. But one of the things that actually I think made this successful without those video packages is the fact that this company, like it or not, really hasn't grown the audience in 3 years. This is the same crew from night one in terms of the audience that was following those core executive vice presidents through Ring of Honor and New Japan. So they knew all these guys, and whoever was going to show up was going to be good and was going to be worth seeing. And that's, you know, both a positive and a negative that he didn't have to do that, Tony Khan, in order to get a decent buy rate here and put on a terrific show that people were going to be interested in. I mean, look, it sold out first day. But if we were talking about an audience up above 1.5 million over the last few months, then you'd say, you know what, those packages are really important because we now know we've grown this audience. There's a possibility that there are a fair amount of people who are watching our show now who don't know who these guys are. And the struggles they have had in growing it. And it, listen, it's not like they've done poorly. They can stay right here and do really well for a long time on television and with their contracts and all of those things. But, you know, we talked about, what, 1.2 on the debut show. They've gotten within that range of, you know, 8-something to a million when they do something big like Blood and Guts. But it does not go beyond. What they have is their audience, and whatever they've been doing really hasn't grown it, even after NXT left Wednesday nights. And so, you know, part of the reason it worked without video packages is because whatever they've been doing, as much as people have enjoyed it who've already been watching it, it doesn't feel like they've significantly expanded the base in the last 3 years.
Right. Yeah. It's with some of the American guys too. And I hear this from people that are casual fans. Well, you know, and I mentioned my friend Jim, and I've said this to people before, and I'll say it here again. He's my friend, but that doesn't mean and believe me, he doesn't think like me. Jim is mid-50s. He grew up in Memphis. He was a big wrestling fan there, Lawler and, you know, that whole crew. And he is a wrestling fan. And so I like to listen to people like that and get their reaction to things. I talk to people inside the wrestling business all the time. So that's, you know, professional opinion. But the guy who's a casual fan, and he is, you know, it said to me, well, like in these factions that AEW has, and let's face it, you know who the leader is in most of these factions. You at least know the name. You may not be that familiar with their particular background or, you know, their style or anything, but you know the name. But then there's the bit players who's that guy? I don't know. Who is that guy? I don't know. Good question. But, you know, and it's not just WWE does the same thing, and I'm guessing probably that Impact does as well. You know, oh, here's Bill Jones. He's a hot prospect. I never heard of Bill Jones. What's Bill? You know, yeah. So yes, absolutely. Video packages and some explanation, and you can do that while these people are wrestling. You know, hey, there's Bill Jones. You know, Bill was a standout as an amateur wrestler at University of so and so, and you know, give me some background. And you know what? Tony Khan isn't afraid to say there is a WWE or there is a this or that. So you can say that they held titles in other federations and this and that. And while we're on that, the people who say get rid of Jim Ross because he called Claudio Castagnoli by his WWE name can kiss my old ass. What? Jesus, I'm not, you know, I know the boo birds have always got something, but that, Jesus Christ, people. Everybody on that desk should be what Jim Ross has been to this business, and they can afford to make a mistake as well. That just pissed me off, to be quite frank.
I would also point out, by the way, that Claudio's social media handles Obviously, he changed them from Cesaro WWE, but he has a variation of Cesaro in his social media handle after he changed it. So it's not like he's running from it.
Right, right. Yeah, but, you know, just fire this man. I can think of several other people in that company I'd get rid of in a heartbeat before I'd even consider getting rid of Jim Ross. But then, hey, what the hell do I know? Yeah, the you know, they're doing. I just think, you know, Wednesday nights. Now this Wednesday night they hit the numbers, and but you know what? It wasn't a record number.
No,
it was the best number since a particular date, and so this didn't make the things go off chart. This didn't set an new all time high for Wednesday night on AEW or anything else, and. Honestly, we've said the last few weeks on Wednesday night haven't been all that spectacular, have they?
No, they have not. I want to bring up the Blood and Guts match real quick because there is something that
you can't.
Have about.
You've got to take at least an hour to talk about.
Well, that's exactly my point. It's not that I dislike the match, but and like I said, we were talking before this. I know you agree with me on this because you brought it up before I did. But you know, strictly coming from the fans' perspective here. I don't know that I can recite chapter and verse to you of the War Games matches once it became WCW corporate owned by Turner Broadcasting, but I can tell you that none of the variations WWE has presented in NXT over the years they were long, but not as long as this with not as many people involved. And that's one of the reasons it was a little longer. It was not the traditional 5-on-5. But, you know, when Dusty invented this thing and put it on the Great American Bash shows starting in 1987, and for the couple of years that they ran under Dusty's stewardship, those matches ended within, I would say, less than 5 minutes of everyone entering the ring because those people had been beating each other for a half an hour by the time the last guy got in. So when I watched this match, and yes, there were more people, and it takes up the better part of an hour. I'm like, come on, man. What you should be doing by the time the last guys get in is everybody on each team should be focused on the two guys who've been in there the longest and trying to make them tap. Like, listen, it was good.
Yeah, there was no.
But.
Yeah, it was.
Go ahead.
I don't know that it was. I never thought it was that good. I mean, if you're just into graphic violence, then you may have had 4 or 5 climaxes. But that was the whole thing too. And the whole rules thing just never quite, I don't know. But it went way too long and it was just pound. Well, when I saw the synchronized where Jericho's team all of a sudden all came alive at the same time and made their comeback, they lost me right there. Okay. We have dance party. We have a choreographed show here. Yeah, but it was too long. It was too long. I will say this. It bothered me with them, so many guys on top of that cage, and I know it was reinforced. You could see that. But Sammy, I got to tell you, Mick didn't have a setup to fall into.
No,
okay?
He sure didn't. Oh, God.
No, he didn't have a nice soft spot to land. So, no, you didn't equal him, and no, we won't forget him, and no, you won't be remembered alongside him. But, yeah, I'm afraid of heights. So, even if I'd have been on team at one, they'd have had to come down and held my hand up on the floor because I'd have never got on top of that sucker. No way. No way. But that bothered me a little bit, too. But, yeah, it was just too long. Too friggin' long. It was. And there was, the story was, I don't know. It just, and the two groups, there was never that huge buildup for this match, right?
Well, it was tough. There was not obviously the Jericho Appreciation Society had their issues with Eddie Kingston, Santana, and Ortiz, but the Blackpool Combat Club kind of got inserted into this in the, you know, the last 2 or 3 weeks just because I guess they realized they wanted to do more than, well, it was just three on Eddie Kingston's group and there were more members of Jericho's group. So you had to bring in some other folks. And once you highlighted the Blackpool Combat Club, now they had more people than, you know what I mean? So it ended up growing maybe a little bigger than they had originally hoped for or intended. So that could have, you know, played into the fact that it was a little longer. But yeah, right. All in all, a successful night, but there are some things that they could clean up for sure.
Yeah, well, the Saturday morning cartoons that opened the show would be good to clean up.
Not a fan of Ethan Page and Orange Cassidy, huh?
Well, you know, I mentioned my friend Jim, who is a longtime wrestling fan. And Jim is heading to Memphis as of today. As you and I are recording this, he's on his way to visit family for the 4th of July weekend. But Wednesday night, Orange came out with Ethan. And, I knew what to expect, been there, done that, right? And I'll be honest, Jim crapped all over this thing. I mean, he was out of, and I saw, because Ethan wasn't even trying to win the damn thing. I mean, it was, and just the whole thing was a setup so Cassidy could get his shit in, plain and simple. That's, and no, Dave, he may be revered by the masses, but to say he is a major star, God, send me whatever you're smoking, please. Okay, I want some too. No, he's, and then we get through that, and it goes way too long. Comedy should not last that long, comedy matches, and that's what it was, whether you like it or you don't like it or whatever you want to call it. And then we came to the tag, which here comes Danhausen. Now, I've worked under contract with WWE, WWF, whatever. And if you have, then you've heard the expression I am about to utter over and over again. Perception is reality. And when you take the best damn tag team of at least of this decade and maybe of recent times, who are carrying so many damn belts, they can't get them all in the same place, and you team them up with a clown, perception is reality. You don't, it takes away from your champions. Now, if you all are getting your climaxes with Danhausen and Cassidy, I'm good with that. You know, I don't want to see it. It don't matter to me, but give them the guys that you know, some of the underneath guys that need the in-ring experience that you use on Dark, not major players, and get them over and let them be funny. And I'm going to tell you, Dave, I don't think that Cassidy, the people get the joke in the building. And let's face it, today's fans, they pretty much want to chant if nobody's doing anything. Anyway, that to me is what those two matches back to back. If you had to have them both on the same show, they should not have been back to back. I will give you a positive here. The little girl who Jade defended her title against was, I don't think I've seen her before. Have you?
I believe she's made a couple of appearances on Dark, but I'm not sure if she's been on Dynamite before. Layla Gray, yeah.
Well, see, then if she walked in the building, she earned a title shot. That makes sense to me. Everybody's smart, right? That was the best, technically, the best match I have seen Jade have. It wasn't long, thank God, and it wasn't that complicated, but she seemed to be in the right place at the right time, and they didn't seem to blow nothing significant that I said, man, they just blew a spot there. So she is improving. She is improving. And again, there's a lot of the talent that's on this show that is good. I'm glad that my friend Nick Camarado carried Archer to a Dark match on
Sunday, yeah, on the pay-per-view.
Yeah, on the pay-per-view. Nick is a good talent, a hell of a wrestler in his own right. And I'll tell you what, put him and Cobb on the mat and see what you got. Nick was a college amateur champion, too. In the I forget which conference he wrestled in, but he was a top wrestler in that conference. I forget which it was now, but there's a hidden, you know. But anyway, yeah. So I found some good stuff, but the main event was way too long and too much of the same thing over, and it wasn't determined that well, I don't think. But anyway, they're going to succeed, and that's cool. You know, everybody there is going to get their checks aren't going to bounce, and that's a good thing, too, I think.
It is. There was a brief Wardlow sighting this week. Looks like the match with Scorpio Sky for the TNT Championship is going to take place next week. I imagine we'll also see something moving forward between Christian and Jungle Boy, who's obviously been absent based on the way he was beaten senseless a couple of weeks ago. Hasn't been on the show the last couple of weeks.
But... And turning everybody heel on the same show, too.
Ah, well, there is that.
There is that. But one thing we can say about our friend Tony Khan, when it comes to excesses, he has them, right? He never does anything just, minor. He does it big time. If we're going to do and run-ins and the whole nine yards. Yeah, I thought, why are you, you switch Christian, and then he's got Luchasaurus. And, wow, I thought the team was over as a babyface team, so I understand you just want to switch Christian, or I don't know that it was a necessary evil, but anyway. But then everybody else, it just didn't make a lot of sense either. I'm sorry, it doesn't.
Well, they have given Jungle Boy some mountains to climb here with Luchasaurus and Christian. I will say this, I have thoroughly enjoyed Christian on the microphone the last couple of weeks, and somebody on social media, I wish I could remember who it was to give you your props for this, said that Christian the last few weeks with the jacket and the turtleneck is going for the look of James Bond villain, and I'm here for it. Please, Christian, keep wearing it. It looks fantastic. I love it.
Yeah. You know what? The only thing I didn't like about his opening promo as a heel is everybody grabs this. Les, why'd you turn heel? Well, the fans didn't like. Well, wait a minute. They were kissing you and throwing roses at you. Oh, well, but I needed to say that because I couldn't think of a better reason. Everybody uses that. And the same thing if the next you would interview the next heel champion in any of the East federations and say, well, now you're the champion. I'm the greatest champion. I'm the greatest holder of this title ever. They all say that too. Try to get a little creative, people. It gets old. And as old as it is for me, and after 62 years, a lot of this I've been hearing for years. I mean, I have. And, everybody shouldn't be saying the same things. That's creativity, boys and girls. It's not like your matches. They can't all be the same.
That brings us to this weekend's Money in the Bank. What do they even call them now? I'm just going to keep calling them pay-per-views. I'm old. I don't care. So we've got.
Yeah, I don't know. What's the difference?
Special events or something, I think Miz called it on the Today Show today. And I'm just like, dude, I can't. I don't have time for that particular term right now. But we'll take a look at the card here this weekend, taking place in Las Vegas, a few weeks ahead of SummerSlam, which is going to be in Nashville. We've got a match for the Undisputed Tag Team Championship, the Usos versus the Street Profits. I feel kind of bad for the Street Profits because I thought they were hot for a little while, several months back, and they just kept getting beat by the Usos over and over and over 6 or 7 months ago. And now we're back here again with a match between these two, and based on the position the Usos currently hold on the card, thanks in large part to not just their own hard work, but obviously Roman Reigns and their role in his faction. As much as I would like to see the Street Profits win, because as I mentioned, they were getting beat over and over and over again, I don't see that happening. Usos retain here.
Yeah, yeah, they do. I'll tell you, let me mention my friend Jim here, and he's saying, we're not buying, he always, if we do a pay-per-view, he comes over to the house. We're not buying this one. I said, you don't have to tell me that. I know, but why? He said, you mean we haven't seen the Usos against the Street Profits enough in the last few weeks? That is something that WWE, maybe not the only company, but they will put you and I together so many times on free television, and then, hey, Les and Vic are going to wrestle on the pay-per-view. What can Les and Vic do on the pay-per-view that we haven't seen them do in these last half dozen matches over these past couple months? Nothing. Well, then let's don't spend the money. Save something for the pay-per-view. let the guys interview about each other. Let them get nose and nose. Nobody lands a punch or one punch and the other guy doesn't get any. Give the people something to anticipate. Because we're not talking, again, I hate to bring up Flair because of what's going on in Nashville, but this is not Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat. These guys aren't. I'm sorry, they're not. And or they aren't Jack Briscoe and Dory Funk Jr. either. So, you know, they've only got so many ways they can have a different match, and then it's going to be the same scene. So give it a break, I think, you know, and don't let them show me everything for weeks before the pay-per-view. I hope that makes sense. I mean, it's, you know, if you and I have seen the same movie for free on television three times and, hey, they're putting that movie in over at the theater and you can go, it's only $12. Why am I going? That's mine. Does that make sense though? I mean,
makes sense to me.
Yeah, it does to me too. It does. Again, give the people something to want. And this particular match is not, it's something they've seen, and I don't know what's going to make it any different. Go ahead. I didn't mean to lock us in at this first match.
Oh, no, not at all. It brings us to, well, I think what's an interesting matchup in terms of what's coming next. The United States Championship match between Theory and Bobby Lashley. It's interesting because, you know, they have really been positioning Theory, you know, despite who the fact that he's been squaring off with Bobby Lashley here week after week in various scenarios. You know, he's obviously been talking a lot about John Cena. They had their little face-to-face vignette on Monday night. It looks like they might be headed or are likely headed in the direction of having John Cena at SummerSlam, likely against Theory. So if that's the case, you know, there's really no point to making John Cena the United States champion. So, you might want to change it here. And at the same time, you look at Bobby Lashley, a former WWE champion, and think maybe he doesn't need the U.S. title either. But it doesn't mean that he can't win it and then immediately show up on Roman Reigns' doorstep. So I'd go with Lashley here to win the title.
Well, you know what? I'm not sure. You know, I'm kind of, and not that I think Theory is the second coming of anybody. I mean, the kid's got, I see potential. I see, you know, he's a good athlete and everything. And I see a lot of value in him long-term, but because of the way he's got the title and because of what he's doing to maintain it, he's basically being what we call a chicken heel, right?
Yes.
So if you come up with the right kind of finish, he wins this, but it's a major screw job, obviously, you know. And because if he doesn't, then he becomes second fiddle to Miz. Do I make sense with that?
Well, you know, you're in listening to you describe that. I guess what I'm actually saying is, if I go with Bobby Lashley, if he's not beating Lashley, he's probably not beating Cena, and he already got destroyed by Brock a few months ago in one of their big events. And so, yeah, if he's going to be taken apart piece by piece by every quote unquote top guy they've got, then where is he really?
Right. Exactly. At this point, you need to protect him a little bit, you know? So if they can come up with, let MVP come out and nail, I mean, I hate all the run-ins that go on all the time now, but, if that's what you're doing, then let MVP, you know, Pearl Harbor Lashley in some manner and Theory gets his win. You know, I don't know, but that's what in some manner I would let Theory hang on to the belt.
So if you spend any significant amount of time on social media, these two have already exchanged quite a few blows. Ronda Rousey versus Natalya for the SmackDown Women's Championship. I have been loving some of Natalya's responses, but they have been getting into it on social media in addition to what they've been doing on television. So I would point out, as Natalya has, by the way, that Natalya is someone who has helped train Ronda Rousey for WWE and professional wrestling. So if you wanted to, you could tell the story of the teacher being one step ahead of the student until the student pulls out something the teacher's never seen. But, you know, again, this is one of those situations where we look back at Sasha Banks and Naomi. This was supposed to be one of their spots. I believe it was Sasha's. And they had to scramble, and you could not pick a better person to get in there and have a terrific match with Ronda Rousey, who could credibly defeat Rousey in the WWE universe, than Natalya. That said, I'm sure Ronda's holding on to the title here.
Yeah, I think Ronda will probably retain the title, although I wouldn't be blink if they wanted to put it on Natalya. Natty has been whatever they needed her to be for how many years, you know? And she is one of the more consistent workers that they have. So, you know, it wouldn't hurt me to see her with the belt and give her a decent run with it. But, yeah, I think Rousey keeps the belt in this respect.
Yeah, Natty's an unsung hero in that company who really deserves her just due.
Yes, sir.
Raw Women's Championship, Bianca Belair versus Carmella. Obviously, Carmella is getting this opportunity since we mentioned Natalya got the call because Sasha Banks has left the building. Carmella gets the call since Naomi was supposed to be in this slot, allegedly, according to some plans that may have been on the board in WWE a few weeks back. And I don't imagine Carmella being able to do anything that's going to stop this train. Bianca Belair retains, and perhaps sooner rather than later, get well soon to Rhea Ripley. We might see Belair and Ripley soon.
Yeah. Yeah, Belair's going to hang on to the belt. I think she's a hell of an athlete. Her and, you know, you mentioned Ripley. Yes, they could have a hell of a match. It's just I don't think her and Carmella shouldn't go too long. But, it'll be passable, but it won't be a great technical match, I don't think. But, yeah, Belair retains.
That brings us to the two Money in the Bank ladder matches. First with the ladies, Lacey Evans, Alexa Bliss, Liv Morgan, Raquel Rodriguez, Asuka, Shotzi. Have they dropped the Blackheart? I guess like Theory's lost Austin. So Shotzi and yeah. Becky Lynch. Wow, it's an interesting group here. Obviously, you know, we just got finished talking about Rhea Ripley and her presence in this match, for me at least, will be sorely missed. You make do with what you got. I still think Ripley's important to have in this picture, but of the names I see here, I'll go with Becky.
Yeah, I think Becky's probably going to get it. What's her name? Rodriguez from NXT.
Yeah.
They see something in her, and I do too. I just don't think she's ready to carry the strap at that level right now. But yeah, I think with a little more seasoning, she's going to be a keeper too.
Not to get too into the weeds here, but when I look at these names again and you talk about the idea of seeing real potential in Raquel Rodriguez, this feels like the kind of match where she spends a really significant portion of it dominating. And so even though she doesn't win the match, you come away remembering her almost as much as the winner.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment of how the match should go. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Kind of crazy that we're here the day or two before this big show, and we don't actually have everybody decided for the men's Money in the Bank ladder match. Seth Rollins, Drew McIntyre, Sheamus, Omos, Sami Zayn, and Riddle are locks for this thing, or at least they're currently penciled in. Who knows what'll happen on SmackDown, since it's still several hours away as we record this. But there is still one open spot, which was originally supposed to be decided on Raw Monday night with Kevin Owens versus, I don't know, Ezekiel, Elias, Elrod. You got any other names? Elroy. I work with a guy.
Somebody.
So they could fill that spot with that match tonight, since they're just jumping between brands now and nobody pays attention to that. Or you could have an all SmackDown match for someone to get into that spot. So there is the possibility that whoever gets entry into this match tonight ends up winning, but we'll have to go with what we've got in front of us. And, you know, when I look at this list, I see some impressive people who would, you know, I mean, we just watched Riddle have a terrific outing against Roman Reigns. I would not mind seeing that again. Drew McIntyre seemingly, although, you know, as a fan, from a fan perspective, you've got to put this out of your mind, but he's probably got something happening when they go to the UK. So I guess with the names remaining, I'd go with Seth.
I don't know where they're going with Riddle. And of course, I think a lot of the Riddle, where they're going is going to be determined by what happens with Randy, with Orton, you know. Legitimately whether he's going to be able to come back or not. I mean, I don't know how serious it is or whether that's just part of the storyline too. But, McIntyre, they're probably saving him for the UK. But to me, there's the guy right? That I want breathing down some champion, and you know, and he's in a position where he could, you know, be breathing down a champion's neck, and the champion not want to wrestle him either. But yeah, it's, and of course the mystery man, whoever that happens to be. The fact that Zane's in it is just, but it was, you know, the way they did it, I'm not adverse to it. And Sammy's a damn good worker. It's just, I think I've said it here, if I have to see a comedy figure, I'll take Sami Zayn because he sells it well, he plays the part well, and he can work with both hands out of his pocket.
You know,
and
that,
he's big enough. To
that's
look
the thing. I think
like
either one of us would prefer to see him in a different role, but he's committed. Whatever they give him, he's determined to make the absolute most out of. And more than that, once you get past that shtick, you know, he can actually make it work in the ring, which makes the shtick a lot more palatable.
Yeah. Well, you know, when he comes, stops you in the hallway and says, "Hey, I'm the leader in the locker, I'm the veteran leader in the locker room." It doesn't come across as he's doing it tongue in cheek. It comes across he believes that. And that to me, that's what's missing so much in the business and other, you know, in all the companies is everybody doesn't come across that way because they're not trying to come across that way. But yeah, I McIntyre or Riddle to me, put him in that. And Riddle oversells, which is better than not selling at all. He needs to refine that a little bit, and he'll be okay, I think.
Well, that wraps up everything we know about this weekend's Money in the Bank big show. We'll find out who the big winners are, and obviously that'll be a subject of discussion on next week's show. But since we're in the process of wrapping this one up for the long holiday weekend for all our friends here in the U.S. who are going to be celebrating the 4th of July, now's a good time to get yourself some DVDs and T-shirts, perhaps with a 4th of July sale.
By gosh, why not? Or if you'd like, stop up here at Rocky Top at exit 128 at Mountain Barn Builders. We'll sell you a doghouse, a shed, a carport, whatever the hell you want. Anyway, yeah. Well, you know, I still would like to do training seminars or weekend training camps. And if you'd be interested in booking me for those, you can reach me, lesthatcher28@gmail.com. I'll get that information out to you. If you'd like to have a copy of the first ever pro wrestling t-shirt on the market, that would have been the Briscoe Booster Tee. Came out in 1972, the brainchild of myself, Jack and Jerry Briscoe, artwork by Jerry the King Lawler. And you can get that at Pro Wrestling Tees, as well as an I'm a Les Thatcher guy, if you happen to be. And, of course, Wrestling from the Heartland, Volumes 1 and 2, over 6 hours of content on both two DVD sets with matches, interviews, and extras. Joe Dombrowski and I do the voiceover. I give the behind-the-scenes stories, and Joe does more of the play-by-play. You can get that at joe-dombrowski.com or Pro Wrestling Library.com, and then there's the Brian Pillman Shows Anthology, the 20-year anniversary. It's a 4-DVD set, 15 hours of content, all four of those great shows from 98, 99, 2000, and 2001. Matches, interviews, auctions, footage, extras. Again, Joe and I do the voiceover, and you can get those at PillmanShows.com or the two addresses I mentioned earlier, joe-dombrowski.com or ProWrestlingLibrary.com. And a week from tomorrow, I'm going to be in Sevierville, Tennessee at the Sevier County Civic Center for Heroes and Legends number 17 Fan Fest. I'll be in the booth with Developmentally Speaking's podcast guys, Brian and Morty, and I'll be there from 1 to 6 p.m. to sign autographs, talk wrestling, take pictures, whatever you like. And we're going to have some of those DVDs I talked about, the HWA DVDs as well as the Brian Pillman DVDs there for sale as well, I'm told. So join us in Sevierville a week from tomorrow. And there are matches after the Fan Fest, the afternoon Fan Fest, there are matches that night. You can see more about that. Go to on Facebook, they have ads up and everything. And as I mentioned, you know, I'm here in at Rocky Top, exit 128, Rocky Top, Tennessee, Mountain Barn Builders, on Tuesday through Saturday from 9:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. and be more than happy to help you out if you're in the market for something like that, or just stop in and say hello. We can chat about wrestling. I do want to say before we wrap this up, the 4th of July weekend, have a great time, but do it safely. Be careful with fireworks. Drive safely. Take care of you and your family. God bless you all, and enjoy your holiday.
Well, brother, we're going to wrap up this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. But again, since we're not going to have a chance to speak on the air between now and Monday, happy anniversary, my friend. 62 glorious years. Congratulations.
Thank you, brother. It's been a ride. It has been a ride. And I hope it can continue for a day or two.
Hopefully at least a week.
Yeah, I'd miss this goofy business if I didn't have it, believe me.
Next stop on this ride is next Friday for another edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. For the legend, Les Thatcher, my name is Victor Sosa. Thank you so much for taking time out of your holiday weekend here to spend a little bit of it with us. And we'll talk to you again next week.